really what's key is asking the right questions and understanding what are the assumptions or the anomalies, something that stands out that you didn't notice before that maybe gives an insight that could lead to a growth area or another opportunity or something we didn't consider before.
Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object Podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, the creative effectiveness ad tech platform. And this is a regular podcast about the future of data-driven marketing. And it's my absolute pleasure and absolute privilege to interview some of the most brilliant and exciting people in the industry. And today is no different. I'm at Lisa Delaney's office, where she is Regional Head of Marketing and Lifestyle Europe for Cathay Pacific. So Lisa, thank you so much for having me here. Could you tell the audience a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Well, Tom, thank you very much for inviting me to be on your podcast. So I'm Lisa Delaney. I'm working for Cathay Pacific here in Europe, and I have a dual role at the moment. So I'm looking after all things marketing, PR and social across our travel, cargo and lifestyle business. And the second part of my role is actually building the lifestyle business. So that's our Asia Miles earn and burn proposition. So a little bit about my history. I actually started on the agency side. So I was working for J. Walter Thompson for the Middle East market, worked for some amazing brands such as De Beers, Motorola, Braun, Ford, and then worked for a number of other agencies. So both integrated marketing and design agencies, and even did a stint with Gillette. But at one point, I ran my own agency for a little while, and then by accident ended up in the airline industry. So I did 2 to 3 weeks at Qatar Airways in the UK, and that turned out to be almost 7 years. So working in the UK, Germany, then the Americas, and back to the UK to look after Europe.
Lisa, you've done it all. I have a very, very high expectation of your input for this podcast now. Thank you. So in that career, in all those different roles, brands, agency side, even doing your own thing, have you been a consumer of marketing books? Are there any volumes that you keep going back to, or a book that you would always recommend to someone?
Yes, I love books and I love recommending books to people. So I think in terms of marketing books, the one I would recommend, which is maybe not strictly a marketing book, is really about more about creativity. And that's The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. It's an amazing book if you haven't read it. I don't know if you have. But basically it has, it's like a 12-week journey. So you have, it's about finding your own creativity and regenerating yourself again. So you every week you read a chapter, and you have a few things that you have to do every time. So every morning you write morning pages, which is basically 3 pages of consciousness streaming, where you're just writing garbage. And it's a great way to, you know, clear your mind and help you think a bit clearly. And the second thing you need to do every week is take yourself on an artist date. And I think that's really cool because it's something that you need to do on your own. And you could be going to an art gallery or a museum, or going for a walk or taking a bike ride. It can be whatever really fills you up, right? And what she talks about is filling your well again. So as everybody has their inner child, an inner artist child. And it's about, you know, during this time, I think we're really plugged into everything, right? We have all the social and everything. I think it's really important to kind of regenerate and find a way to find your creativity again. And that could be if you're in a rut in your life, or it could be that you're going through a transformation program, you need some creative ideas, be creative solutions to problems, could be creative financing, could be anything. So I think it's a great book, a little journey that you go along that helps you regenerate and find your inner child again.
So I have read this book. It's embarrassing when I ask that question quite often on this podcast. I'm like, nope, not read that. Probably won't. Not a great reader. But that was a life-changing book for me. Probably 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It certainly ended a relationship I was in. I think it was like, right, no, that's clearly not good for me. Let's move on. But the practice of morning pages, the practice of just writing, as you say, it's garbage, right? You're just writing nonsense. It kind of just gets all of that stuff out so you can think more clearly. In the end, the artist date was, as I remember, it was you would take a certain sense on a date. So you'd go, right, I'm just going to listen to things. So this afternoon, I'm going to go to the park and I'm going to not walk around with my eyes closed, but just pay more attention to sound.
Yeah.
And it was so nurturing, because at your point around, you know, social media and distraction, that's essentially someone selling to you constantly, right? Whether that's an influencer selling to you, or Apple or Android selling to you, or if it's a brand, it's just like trying to get in your brain. Whereas this artist state, what it does means that you are just nurturing that creative part of your soul, really.
Yeah.
So, I cannot recommend that book enough. However, I'm quite scared of it. Like the thought of doing it, because you have to like write letters to
yourself,
people that have done you wrong.
Oh yeah,
and yet yourself, and then I remember at a certain point you have to go back and read all of your morning pages. It's just like, oh my god, I sound like a completely wild, untamed person. So I should do it again, and you're nudging me towards it. But it is a terrifying experience in a lot of ways, but yeah, unique,
totally unique. And I completely agree with it being life changing. So I gave it to my sister about 20 so years ago, and she was doing an art degree, and that basically helped her unplug, and she was really stuck in a creative way, and it just massively helped her. So I'm gonna do that book again, I think.
Let's do it at the same time, and then we can coach each
compare
other
notes.
But how does that transfer to marketing, right? So you've got Black Friday sale coming up. What's that got to do with that?
Well, I still write my morning pages, so I still write as much as I can. Okay, not consistently, but I do write, and I think it just helps clear your mind. So for me, it's about helping me come up with things that are more creative. I think also when you've been in an industry for a while, you get a little bit stuck. So I think just having that clarity of mind and looking outside and not getting too pigeonholed in the area that you're in. So it just frees up your mind, frees up your creativity.
So unfortunately, we've got to move on. I would love to talk to you about this book and your experiences, but I have a podcast to deliver. So the next question is, what advice do you have to become a better data-driven marketing that isn't going on artist dates and writing morning pages?
Yes, I think the other side of it, obviously, yes, the data, it's amazing that we have so much data now to work with. And quite often, you know, my role, obviously I'm not the person who's dealing with all the raw data. So what I'm having is a lot of reports being given to me or dashboards that I'm using. So quite often, I think really what's key is asking the right questions and understanding what are the assumptions that have been made when someone's presenting this to you. So what is the story that they're trying to tell? And then understanding what's missing from that data, right? So sometimes it's the holes or the gaps that are quite interesting, and then, or the anomalies, something that stands out that you didn't notice before that maybe gives an insight that could lead to a growth area or another opportunity or something we didn't consider before. So I think taking the right the question, and then also just being a bit more inquisitive on the data and looking at it from a different perspective. And I think also we have our own biases. So we all know that we take data to tell our own stories, right? So I think also taking that with a different lens.
So I'm writing a book at the minute about data, creativity and advertising. And I've done it based on interviews, right? So I knew even less about it than I thought I did when I went into it. And one of the observations was from a couple called Faris and Rosie Yakob. I don't know if you know those guys, but they basically said that all large organizations, be it businesses, nonprofits, governments, have to use alpha numerical data, because the scale's so big, right? And so that's where you get spreadsheets, dashboards, reports. But what that misses is the nuance, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the people I interviewed for the book was Rory Sutherland. And he said this, I don't know if it's his research or someone else's, but he was talking about coffee shops. Coffee shops always close at like 5 o'clock. And I was like, well, yeah, of course they do, because no one wants a coffee at 4 o'clock. And he said, no, yes, they do. There's plenty of people that drink coffee late into the day. But there's this thing in the industry where the people who work in those coffee shops tend to not own them, so a Costa or a Starbucks or whatever. So what they do is that they don't want people coming in for a coffee at like 5 to 5, Right. So what they do, they have this phrase in the industry called getting the mop out. So what they do, they stick their chairs on the tables by the window.
Yes.
So people, you know, you and I want to catch up over a tea. We don't want to be somewhere where they're like cranking chairs about, right? So actually, the actual data point is that people on low wages in coffee shops want to go home on time or early, if possible. So what they do is they put these chairs out and get the mop out, as it were. So the data point would say the coffee shops, no one wants coffee at 4 or 5. Well, that's not true. Yes, they do, actually. So I think it's a real problem for data-driven marketers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got a click-through rate. You've got a cost per acquisition. You've got a view-through rate. You've got a dwell time. You've got a cost per, you know, lifetime value. But that's not the whole picture. So I'm just out of coffee. I'm talking too much. But how do you ask the right questions? What are the questions that you go to most often that get you the full picture of what the data is talking about?
Mm. I think first one is the assumptions. What are the assumptions being made? Because I think that's the starting point, right? Like, what's the filters being used? What did we take out? Because when you know what's being taken out, you can decide if you need it back in again. That makes sense. So I think that's one question to start with, is definitely the assumptions. And then I think also trying to align it with where you want to get to, because I think, is this like, if you're trying to grow something, so it maybe depends on your objectives as well, right? If you're trying to grow a business and you're just talking to, like, to your point, the same people all the time, is it that you are missing people outside of that range that we're not talking to? So I think, yeah, it's just about digging in, like, how did you get the data? Where did it come from? What are we missing? What's been excluded?
This episode of the Shiny New Object podcast is brought to you in partnership with Manfest. Whether it's live in London or streamed online to the global marketing community, you can always expect a distinctive and daring blend of fast-paced content, startup innovation pitches, and unconventional entertainment from Manfest events. You'll find me causing trouble on stage, recording live versions of this podcast, and sharing a beer with the nicest and most influential people in marketing. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com. We're going to now talk about your shiny new object, which is tech for engaging experiences.
Yes.
What is that? Yes. And why is it your shiny new object?
Yes. I get excited about the possibility of technology and just creating these more memorable experiences, right? So I think after the pandemic, everybody, you can see, why do people travel? Why is that being so popular? And the trend has still been for people that want to travel even after the pandemic, and more so because you want experiences, right? Everybody wants to have a nice experience. So I think what's interesting is that there's, with all the developments in technology and now AI and everything else, there's a lot of room that we can do something a little bit more immersive and engaging and just take people along on journeys without even maybe leaving the country.
So can you give me an example of that? Some work you've done where you've created an engaging experience using tech?
Absolutely. So last year we did something called Flight Path, which was at the Outernet in the Now building. So I'm not sure if you've been there. It's at the top of Tottenham Court Road. It's a beautiful space that is open to the public. It's purely very open and immersive space. So we did something called the Flight Path, which was using technology such as our live flight data and our 3D modeling of our aircraft and music that was composed specifically for this piece of work. And what was really interesting was just to see the consumer reaction or people's reaction. So, and it was continuous. Like every time I went there, every time I saw people, their phones were out and there was oohs and ahs throughout the whole experience, which was literally, I think, 90 seconds, or it's not even a very long period of time, but the reaction was the same. And also just understanding, then hearing from my colleagues in Japan, basically saying that, you know, an influencer had been in London and was now showing this in Japan. So to see the reach and it to go across the world was quite exciting.
So you're like the dream client for an agency, really, that you would sign off. Like, that's just the most perfect case study, is to have that specific bit of digital out of home to be used by a premium airline. It's brilliant. So how did that come about? Did someone pitch that to you? Or were you like, look, we need to stop worrying about PPC and start focusing on building the brand through emotion? What was the problem that bit of work was there to solve.
Yeah, absolutely. So the brief is actually quite simple. And to be fair, the agency publicist and I worked really closely together and we turned it around really quickly, working closely with the Outernet. They would probably say it was a dream client because literally we did it in about 4 weeks, which was amazing. And it was came out of a challenge that we had, obviously post-pandemic, Cathay Pacific, we've been hurt probably the hardest, right? Because Hong Kong and China only opened up last year and everybody forgets that. So our markets really were last to open. So the brief was showcase that we're an airline, showcase our hub Hong Kong and some of the key destinations that we fly to, which is Hong Kong, Japan and Australia. And so this, this piece of work did all three of those things, was immersive. And we went to see the space and felt that it wasn't something you could just run in a normal ad. So we had obviously creative that was coming from head office for a big brand campaign. And it was not just something you could plug and play. We really felt you needed to create something that was unique and different and engaging for this space.
I work in a performance marketing world, so I'm going to have to ask you this question. Was there any kind of conversion at the end of it? Because I've seen stuff on that.
What's Outernet.
Is it called the Outernet? Is that
yeah,
what
the whole building's called?
The whole building's called the Outernet, right. Okay, I wasn't sure if that specific digital bit had its own name. But I saw something for a luxury brand and you had to like hold up download an app via a QR code and then you had to point it at some butterflies and you had to try and catch the butterflies. It didn't work. It was horrible. But I got sort of sucked into that. There was like a funnel there and I knew what was happening. I was getting like sucked into this thing. But was there any sort of, conversion on it, or did you have to fight really hard not to have a QR code on it?
Yes, we did look at those things, obviously. Do we want a QR code? Do we want to have social media handles or something on there? But at the end of the day, we felt that we really wanted to create an immersive experience. And actually, even the creative director, he said the best part of it was when someone at the end of it said, oh, it was an ad. So they were so disappointed. And that was kind of, we had done our job. And I think really it was about awareness building and consideration and also targeting a different audience because we've been out of market for so long. So we needed something that was a bit more impactful, not your usual everyday type of advertising. So.
And where did that execution sit in amongst the rest of the strategy?
Yeah, so we had obviously a big campaign going on with Out of Home, and it was a campaign called Feels Good to Move that we had creatives came from head office. So there was a lot going around it, and we just tailored some of the, there's Vista screens that are outside of the Outernet that we tailored to fit both the campaign and what was going on inside the Now building.
So Global sent you something that you had to work with and you're like, right, cheers guys, we can do this as well. That's about the size of it.
Yeah, that's about right.
Would you do it again?
Yes, actually we're going to run it next week.
Brilliant. What, the same creative to put
yes.
that media again?
Yes, brilliant. We're going to change the outside. So we have a sale coming up. Okay. Next week. tip. So it was just so engaging. So my colleague went to go see it. We obviously did another sense check of it. And she just said it was just as good as it was the first time I saw it. So, and I was saying earlier as well that I think when I worked at De Beers, I was mentioning, we were speaking earlier about how there was kind of these diamond moments. And I felt like this creative has those kind of sparkly moments, those three times where people just go ooh and ah. And I think that's a winning creative that's very difficult to replicate and do again.
I had an interesting interview also for the Data and Creativity book with Peter Field, and he was talking about that tension and annoyance between performance and brand campaigns. And And he was saying, as performance marketers, we get really excited that we run a performance campaign. And we're like, oh, this had a click-through rate of blah, blah, blah. And the conversion rate went up massively and the cost per acquisition went down. And that's really brilliant. But he's like, well, unless you're like a kind of kitchen sink, you know, you make soap in your bedroom and you sell everything on Instagram, that's really misleading, because part of the reason that that performance moment happened or that conversion moment happened is because of the brand you have built. And I think we when you have big organizations, you have your performance team over here, you have your brand team over here, and that they're not always related and don't understand the relationship between the two things. So I'm really keen to know, were you tracking the performance? Not, we've moved past the QR code thing. I mean, like, yeah. Were you tracking, did was there a drive in website traffic or brand uplift? Like, how are you measuring the performance of the reminding people that you existed and what you did and where the hub was, but also how are you tracking it in those kind of hard more business metrics?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have it was a full funnel campaign. So we did go, you know, from top to bottom, and we work very closely with our digital sales team. So we are tracking also our brand equity tracker. So we have a BE brand equity tracker that comes from head office. So it did increase 10 percentage points during that time period. We also had an increase in our website traffic, conversion went up, etc. So we have a lot of metrics in terms of what was the revenue generated during that sale period or that time, because it's a key booking period as well. So it's from September to October or a bit of November as well. So it was a really key booking period. But really for us, it's about driving quality traffic to the website. And then it's for digital to convert it, right?
So to push your own bit of advice back at you, what data was missing? What were the assumptions that might have been wrong in that experience?
I think for us, we were really just getting back on our feet again. So I think we could have been stronger in determining the key metrics to measure before we even went out there. So I think some of it is, you know, looking at it at the end of the campaign rather than how do we optimize during the campaign. Was there something we could have done differently? You know, it was quite a different time for us because 2023 was the first. We're comparing between 2019, right? Because we had this gap. So it wasn't a normal year. So I'd say this year we have more data that we can compare versus last year. We have better metrics in place. So I think this year will be more like a normal year for us. So it's been unusual for Cathay, I'd say.
So last year was like, right, we're back.
Yes.
That's the new benchmark. We did well. Right.
Yes.
Where do we go from here?
Yes.
Well, look, unfortunately, we're at the end of the podcast and we've been through a real range of different stuff and different bits of advice from the artist way through to missing dark data and to an incredible digital out of home experience. So I look forward to hopefully seeing. Let me know when it's live. I'll pop down and see it. I would love to see it happen. If someone wants to get in touch with you about anything we've talked about, where would you like them to do that? And what makes a message that you'll actually reply to?
LinkedIn is probably the easiest. You can easily find me there. Just search Lisa and Cathay Pacific. I think you'd find me. I think a message that comes across that you've done a bit of research obviously just stands out, doesn't it? Rather than a generic list of here's what I'm selling, which we get a lot of.
I just want one guest to say, just send me a generic message. That'll be fine.
Yeah.
Lisa, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been brilliant.
Hi. Just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.